The Gestalt Gardener podcast is brought to you by Varicosity Vein Center, providing health assessment screenings and compassionate care to improve your vascular functionality and quality of life. Our doctors and vein specialists offer solutions to painful varicose veins, spider veins, and other venous diseases to our patients. Now offering complimentary vein screenings in Jackson, Madison, and Ridgeland. Information and appointment scheduling at varicosityveincenter.com.
Good morning. Ain't it a great morning outside? Woo-hoo, the weather's changing. Sometimes it's cold, sometimes it's warm, but it's always going to be February for the next week or so anyway. Hey, I'm horticulturist Felder Rushing. You've tuned in to the Gestalt Gardener. It's a program put on by Mississippi Public Broadcasting. Me and Java Chapman, my awesome producer, and all the folks at MPB welcome you to this garden party. Here it is, end of the first week in February. Things are still weird, but there's hope in the garden. Things are coming up and blooming and all sorts of positive things we're going to be talking about. Got some cheesy music, some friendly music coming up, some emails, and a couple of interesting things that I've been up to. I think you'll be interested in them. Anyway, we're going to sit back and do a live call-in radio program as soon as we come back from the news. Welcome to MPB.
This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back. Horticulturist Felder Rushing. For the next hour or so, it's all about gardening. Gardening Southern style, that is. If you're listening by podcast from anywhere else in the world, we welcome you. We talk a little funny, but we get it done. Here it is, the well into February. We've got camellias in bloom. We've got daffodils. We've got flowering quince. There's just all sorts. The flowering cherries are blooming, flowering apricot. There's all sorts of stuff starting to get our juices going a little bit. A little bit early for doing some stuff, but there's a couple of things that are crucial to do this month if you lean towards doing those kind of things. I'll touch on those in just a little bit. Things that if you're going to do them, you ought to do them pretty soon. And again, that's because we're live and we can talk about stuff like this. If you've got some things you'd like to talk about, it's real, real easy. Give me a call. It's toll free, 1-877-MPB-RING. We'll give the numbers over and over again, so feel free to give us a call. I got the lines wide open, and again, if there's anything on your gardening mind, let's hear it. Let's hear it. We'll talk about it, and I won't try to sell you anything. I won't try to fool you. I'll tell you what I would do or what I'd recommend my mother do or my neighbors do, not necessarily what a horticulturist would do, even though I am a horticulturist. I'm not stuck by the rules. We can cut corners. We can let some things slide. There's some things that we know that we don't really need to do. Some you can overcomplicate anything, but we're talking about gardening, not horticulture. If you want to get into horticulture topics, trust me, I can do that. 31 books under my belt. I feel like I can probably cover some bases. Look stuff up real quick. As a matter of fact, if you like to, don't feel like calling and want to shoot me an email, I'm on my computer right now. It's real easy, garden@mpbonline.org. And like I say, I'm on the computer right now looking at it. There's a couple of things going on right now. This weekend, there's a real nice event. If you're interested in roses, old roses, shrub roses, ever-blooming roses, easy roses, own root roses, not the grafted kind, this is going to be a rose pruning workshop, a session. It's in Jackson, Central Mississippi, a block north of our state capital, downtown Jackson. There's an old historic cemetery called Greenwood Cemetery. It goes back to like 1819. Got a bunch of governors buried there, Eudora Welty, some other folks. But there's a lot of old roses planted between the tombstones that are just a real joy. They bloom a lot. They don't need spray. They don't get sprayed. But once a year, we like to go in and the ones that are the biggest or the most cluttered, we like to cut them back and take the cuttings home and root them ourselves because this is the time of year to do it. If you're interested in that, it's going to start at 9 o'clock, Greenwood Cemetery, downtown Jackson, again, a block north of the state capitol. Hard to miss that. Look for the big golden eagle and go a block north. If you got some loppers, some pruning shears, bring them. If you got some plastic bags for cuttings, maybe a Sharpie pen so you can keep them labeled. Well, there'll be folks there pruning roses, talking about roses, showing you how to root roses, and actually maybe planting some roses they rooted from cuttings from the cemetery. Anyway, it's free, and it's going to start at 9 o'clock Saturday, February the 8th. If you're hearing this on a rebroadcast, it could be down there for a couple of hours, so hit on now, down that way. I don't have anything else on my calendar to talk about right now, except that next week, next Saturday, February the 15th, I'm going to be giving a free home fruit talk. How to choose the right variety, the right types of fruits that look good in the landscape and make fruit without a bunch of care. How to choose the right varieties for our part of the country. How to plant them, how to prune them, fertilizing, that kind of stuff. It's a free seminar. It's always well attended. And get this, it's indoors. So rain or shine or freeze or hot or whatever, come on down. That's going to be at Hutto's Garden Center, which is in Jackson off of on Ellis Avenue right off of Interstate 20. Again, next Saturday, I'll talk about it a little bit more. Starts at 9, free home landscape fruit seminar. Everything you need to know from a guy who does it himself. Not trying to sell you anything, but we're going to talk about it. And there's some stuff you would like to get. That's a good place to do it. Anyway, those are the two things I've got. There's some other things coming up next month, and we got plenty of time to yak about that. Meanwhile, let's do what we're here for today. Let's open up the screen door and welcome to our garden party, Sar from Memphis. Hey, Sar, how are you?
Oh, hi. How are you, sir?
Doing fine. What can I help you with?
Hydroponic gardening. As I understand it, no soil is necessary, and there are ways to do it both inside and outside. I was kind of hoping you could talk about that a little bit. I'll just...
Well, I can, sir, but the problem is there's so much to say. The best I can do is summarize it. First of all, they are grown in a... not dirt or potting soil. They're grown in like sand or perlite, something that helps support the roots, and water is run over the roots that's got dissolved fertilizer in it. So, you know, you can do it in gallon jugs. You can do it in any kind of pot, anything that you can run fresh water into, a little bit of nutrients, hopefully with something the roots can wrap around, like a little perlite or some coarse gravel or something like that. Instead of growing them in the dirt, we're growing them in water with dissolved fertilizer. Other than that, they still need sunshine. They need, you know, all the regular stuff, whether it's indoors or out. So if you could try it indoors, kind of hard to pull off vegetables, even in a south window, because that's not quite enough light for most vegetables, unless you're trying to grow leafy greens or, you know, herbs or things like that. But if it needs flowers or fruit, probably needs more light than it's going to get in a regular house. So anyway, that's kind of an overview, and it can be done very simply. You go online and look at it, it will complicate things to where you would not believe. But we can break down as simple as you want if you want to follow it up with an email. But anyway, it's not that hard to do. It's like rooting something in your window in a glass of water, taking a couple of steps further.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. There's a lot of stuff to carry to cover there, Sara. But like I say, you can do it if you want to give it a try. It's kind of interesting. It's fun. But if you want some more information, shoot me an email. I'll be glad to help out.
Will do, sir. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate that. Okay. That was from Memphis, Tennessee. If you want to give me a call, toll-free 1-877-MPB-RING. I do present a lot of programs to libraries and master garden groups, garden clubs, all sorts of things, landscape consultations. If there's anything I can help you promote or anything I can help you with, I've got quite a few things lined up starting in latter part of this month, first part of next month. But there's some things I can help you with. Shoot me an email, garden@mpbonline.org. A lot of master gardener things coming up, including some plant swaps I'm going to be talking about, but they're not for another month or a little bit more than a month, so we'll talk about that a little bit later. Would like to mention that I'm headed home next week. I've been in England studying winter gardens all across the United Kingdom. Over here, winter is as important as any other season. They may not have a lot of stuff, but they grow camellias even up in Scotland. So they grow quite a bit in the wintertime. But get this, in the United Kingdom, in England, they plan their gardens to be as attractive in the middle of the winter as any other season. They've been here. They've done that. They don't wait for spring or summer. They actually plant stuff now that will look good this time next year. All sorts of ways you could have an incredibly pretty, even flowering garden in the middle of the winter if you plan ahead. And that's the kind of thing that I've been looking at. As soon as I get off the air today, I'm catching a train down to London. It takes about 2.5 hours to get to London, I guess. I don't go to London very much anymore. But anyway, I'm going to have an early morning opportunity to photograph in the Royal Horticultural Society Wisley Garden. They got a new exhibit on indoor plants used in unusual ways. Probably do a blog on it soon. Meanwhile, daffodils blooming, flowering quins, early plums. You want to call and talk about it? Bring it on. Let's go now to Jackson and talk with Jim. Morning, Jim. Howdy.
Good morning, Felder. Jim Rosenblatt here.
Hello. What's up?
I have a question about my good neighbors in my garden, worms. Every year I take some shredded leaves and work them into the ground, but is there anything else I could do to promote the worm population in my garden?
Now, you're talking about your raised bed garden. You don't use a tiller. You just dig it by hand, a shovel and stuff like that, right?
That's right.
Yeah. As long as you don't use a tiller, it's not that big a deal. They eat the leaves and grass clippings and things like that. But just like cows, cattle farmers don't feed their cows just hay. They also give them a protein supplement. And worms benefit from that, too. So if you'll dust the area, when you put your leaves on top, lightly dust them with a little cottonseed meal. It's got nitrogen in it. It's got a little phosphorus and potash, natural. But most important, it's got protein. And those worms will get 10 inches a foot long. Within just months, you'll have huge whoppers. But give them just a light dusting of cottonseed meal when you first put the leaves on, then turn that in. That'll help a lot.
Is that available at any garden store?
Well, I don't know if every garden center cares, but most of them do. Some, price it around a little bit. There's one that's not very far from you that bags it up themselves. They buy it in bulk and sell it in their own individual bags. Might be a little bit cheaper. It only takes a good dusting, Jim. A pint jar, which is a pound, will cover 100 square feet. That's bigger than your garden. So you don't need more than a pound or two at the most. So, and by the way, if you'd like a little bit more information about that, I did an article about this is so stupid. My three favorite worms, the worms in my garden with pictures and how I grow them and what they do and some interesting stuff about, believe it or not, the lowly earthworm. So if you want to go to Felder Rushing blog and just type in worms in the search box, it'll take you to kind of a funky article about growing them and also the different types you run into.
I'll do that, and then I'll be ready to go fishing this summer too.
That's right, and not only that, I even have a recipe on there if you want to try eating them. They're high protein, low cholesterol, just what the doctor ordered.
I think I'll pass on that one.
Oh, that's a bad pun. See you later.
Okay, thanks, Felder.
Okay. I did a blog about worms, earthworms, red wiggler worms, and the green worm, that little curly Q one that's way down deep that has such a funky smell. That's a Felder Rushing blog. Not a website, but Felder Rushing blog. Got a couple of other interesting things on there you might enjoy. But we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back with more phone calls. I feel like I'm talking real fast because I'm excited. We got the lines open. Give me a call. It's toll free, 1-877-MPB-RING. By the way, every time that gets 45, 50 degrees or above out in the winter garden, you can see honeybees and butterflies. Hopefully, they're on some of the wildflowers in your lawn. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back, and hopefully with some of your phone calls right after this.
I'm Allison Walker, the Lady Auto Mechanic, host of AutoCorrect. If you're enjoying this podcast, try my podcast, AutoCorrect. We help steer you in the right direction with your car problems. Find me on any podcast platform or at autocorrect.mpbonline.org.
All righty, folks, welcome back. Horticulture's Felder Rushing. Got some lines open if you want to give us a call. Would like to mention a couple of emails I got. They're very timely. One is, should we really rotate crops in home gardens? I mean, that sounds like a farm type thing. Even flower gardeners should swap out stuff from time to time. If you plant the same things in the same bed or the same pot over and over and over, year after year, problems related to that plant or its close relatives do build up. You plant tomatoes and peppers in the same spot every year, you're going to end up with some problems that we really can't cure. So it's always a good idea, even if you've got a very small garden, to move stuff to different corners every year. Move things around. Don't follow related things with the related things. But anyway, it's just a good idea to keep insects and diseases from building up. It's one of the advantages of having several raised beds instead of one big garden. You could treat a small raised bed, not much bigger than a coffee table or let's say, maybe 4 or 5 feet square. If you have 2 or 3 of those, you could treat them as individual gardens, planting one as needed. And when it's ready to harvest, you just harvest and redo that one little area. But keep it going by having several small gardens or different areas in your garden, and moving things around. Keep things going all the time. Now let's go down to Dewey and Biloxi. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
So far, so good. What's up?
So I have these 2 sago palms in my yard that I planted about 10 years ago. And here recently, in the last few months, it started getting kind of this powdery-looking substance, and I think it's scaled. My question is, it's been a couple months. Is there a point where that's unsalvageable, or is there anything I can do to try to save?
Well, there's a couple of things you can do. First of all, scale, you can take your thumbnail and rub a scale insect off. You know, the ones that I normally see on sagos are like little small half-sized BBs, if you're old enough to remember what a BB is. And anyway, they scrape right off, usually the bottom of the leaves. There is a small waxy one. It's not a little bump, but it's just a little lumpy thing. But you can usually scrape them off. And if that's what it is scale. It's hard to spray for them, though, because scale cover themselves up so sprays don't get in, and you don't want to use the kind of poisons that's going to poison the whole plant. So what I'd recommend would be, and it sounds like a little trouble, but it's worth it, go out sometime the next month or so and just simply snip off all the leaves. It'll look kind of funny, but as you know, that'll put out all sorts of new growth in the spring, maybe even a second growth a little bit later. But that gets rid of most of the scale that are on the plant, and the new growth will come out. Maybe it's so fast that it'll outrun them. But if you cut the plants back where there's no leaves left on it, won't hurt it. And then if you want to take it a step further, Dewey, you can spray it with what's called a dormant oil. They sell it at garden centers, and it's a plant-safe oil that covers the plant, and if there's any scale you miss, it covers them up and suffocates them. So dormant oil plus pruning, or let's say pruning plus maybe some dormant oil, and that'll keep the worst of them under control. And if you're not really if you're not sure about it, shoot me a pretty clear close-up of the white stuff, because it might be something completely – if you can't scrape the scale off, we need to find out what it is before you do anything.
Okay. We will try that.
Okay, let's get it to – the patient needs to stick out his tongue and say, ah, before we can take it any further.
Ah.
see you later.
Thank you so much. All right.
You bet. By the way, I got an email from a listener who was listening last week, heard me talk with a fellow about chestnut trees, want to know if chestnuts will grow in this part of the country. I said they would, but I don't know where you could get them. Anyway, a listener said there's a little garden center outside Louisville, Mississippi, up in north central Mississippi on Highway 25. It's called Evergreen Nursery. Apparently, it sells disease-resistant hybrid chestnut trees. Normally, I don't recommend garden centers unless they have a truly unique thing that's hard to get anywhere else. But Evergreen Nursery, Highway 25 outside Louisville, apparently has the new hybrid disease-resistant chestnut trees. Now, let's slide over to Flowood, Mississippi. Hey, Tina, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hello.
Excuse me.
Yeah, so
I have a couple of fruit trees that are growing like straight up, like pencils. Can I pop them?
Yeah, you can. What kind are they?
Peach.
Let me ask you this. How long have they been in the ground, about?
3 years.
Okay. Here's what I would do. If you drive to any peach orchard on earth, anywhere on earth, peaches are going to come up about 2 or 3 feet, and then they're going to branch out with main limbs and go outward like a bowl shape. And the only way they do that is they cut it off at that height and let it sprout out new growth that high. So if you don't feel like cutting it down that far, cut it down as far as you can. If there's any branches left, thin those out, you know, at least to 3 or 4 feet. And if there are any branches left, thin those out to ones that are pointing in different directions. And then this year, anything that grows straight up, just cut it off and only leave stuff that's growing up and out. Sort of like if you're holding a baseball with your hand pointing up towards the sky and take the baseball out, it should look like that. And that's what all commercial peach plum growers do every year. They cut off all the stuff that's growing straight up and only leave out and up stuff. And sort of like it's like shaping up eyebrows. You get rid of the ones you don't want, leave the ones you do want. So and and it won't hurt the plant to cut it back if you get right on it.
And can I do it now?
This is the best time. In my, fruit seminar I'm giving next week, it just shocks everybody. I put these this fruit tree up on a table that's like 6 feet tall, and they want, I don't know how much they sell them for, 10, 15, 20, whatever they sell fruit trees for. It's 6 or 7 feet tall. I take my pruning shears and whoop, knock it, tip it right off about 2.5 feet, and people gasp about that, but that's actually the best tree you can plant, one that's been cut off, you know, as soon as you can to make it branch out. But this is the time of year to do it.
Okay, that's what I needed. Thank you.
Okay, okay, and be sure to come back and thin out the stuff that's growing, you know, this year that's not growing out and up. Anything that's growing straight up, just pop it off, and the tree will get its main framework for the rest of the tree's life.
Okay, good. Will do.
Okay, appreciate it, Tina.
Thank you.
You bet. What I didn't tell her is that people are going to talk about her really bad because it looks terrible. But this is what everybody does. Hey, let's go up to Madison now. Hey, Jason, thanks for calling.
Hey, buddy. Good morning. How you doing?
So far, so good. What's going on?
Awesome. We've got an indoor aquarium. It's a 20-gallon aquarium that uses hydroponics for its filtration system. And so it basically goes from the bottom tank and then the water siphons to an upper tank. And so we have various water style plants planted in that. And we've got some this like beaded clay like structure that the plants use to hold on to.
Right.
The issue that we're having is that this water, since it's got an open top to the aquarium, it evaporates fairly quickly. We get filtered bottle service water shipped to our house, and so we actually use that for the water instead of using the CMU water out of the faucet to put water into the aquarium. But what I'm noticing is that the plants, after time, they end up struggling. We've tried to put nitrogen that we get from the pet store into the aquarium, but sometimes it almost seems like if you over fertilize something,
you get a lot of algae.
That too, and so I'm just trying to see, is there a supplement that we can get that will be more beneficial to the plant since the water does come and go so quick?
Yeah, this is a good question, and if you've gone online, you probably read 1,000 different opinions about this. But let me ask you this: do you also have fish, or is it mostly the plants?
No, we do have fish in there. That's what the aquarium is for the fish on the bottom side.
Yeah.
And the top side is just a
whole. Yeah. Well, it's not too complicated, but there's just enough variables where it's hard to come up with a real straight answer, as you probably found out online already, partly because some plants really not made to be forever type plants. They need to be replaced, just like fish. You know, sometimes you got to get you a new angelfish every now and then. Same thing with plants. Don't be embarrassed about having to swap plants out from time to time. Here's a problem, though. The type of fertilizer that you use may not be everything the plants need. They also need phosphorus and potash. In other words, something like Miracle-Gro, but only in very small amounts. And I don't know that that's good for fish, because I'm the plant guy. So we need to find out, can you use water-soluble plant fertilizer at really small, let's say 1/4 strength or even less, see if that that doesn't harm your fish. I'd be glad to do a little research on it over the weekend if you want to shoot me an email. But that's the approach I would use: is something that's got all the micronutrients that plants need, which is not just nitrogen, phosphorus, and potash, but also zinc and copper and all those little what they call trace minerals. And again, I'm not trying to recommend one brand or another, but Miracle-Gro is widely available and it's got all those things. Just don't know if it's good for fish or not. And again, it's pretty normal to have to swap plants out from time to time.
Yeah, we do that frequently throughout the year. You know, here's my question: is that we constantly monitor that water to make sure it's the pH level is right and everything else for the fish.
Right.
Is there anything
right.
like that for plants to be able to monitor the water, see what you need to add or not add?
No. Well, the people who have who do hydroponics, they have all sorts of kits like that too. But, you know, the home kits are just ballpark figures. And, you know, my way of thinking, if you could test the water, if you get a little home a garden pH type tester thing, not pH, a kit that tests for nitrogen, phosphorus, and potash. You know, those are three things you need to check for plants. Maybe also for fish. I don't know. Just not a fish guy.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate your help. Thank you very much.
Well, it's just a start. You know, when I don't know something, I'm always happy to look it up because that way I get edified a little bit too. So shoot me an email. And even if you find something out, let me know. I'd like to find out.
I will. Thank you very much. I'll send you an email.
Okay, care, Jason. Buddy. Good luck on it.
Thanks, bud. Take care.
All right. Okay, before we take this next call, let me mention this. I got a really sweet email from a listener named Donna Krebs. Donna Krebs. She wanted to know about pruning some stuff. But I was thrilled that she signed her email with her name followed by D period, I period, G period. It's the first time anyone has self-identified as a digger, determined independent gardener, which is the topic of my next book. University Press has a manuscript now. It's about maverick gardeners. You know, not the rebellious people who just rebel against rules. They just don't follow stupid rules. They do their own thing, period. Anyway, this first time anybody identified herself as a DIG, a digger, and a determined independent gardener. Donna, I appreciate that. Now let's go up to Barbara in South Haven. Hey, Barbara.
Hello. I need to cut that off. I called a couple of 3 weeks ago about moving a peony.
Mm-hmm.
And I did what you said, but I didn't realize some of these roots are at least 2 feet long. What do I do?
Nothing. Did you divide it up into different pieces or just dig the whole thing up and replant it?
No, sir. I dug the whole thing up and tried to put it in a large, large pot, but I didn't know what to do about these 2 feet long roots. Just break them off, cut them off?
Just cut them off. I would cut them, make a clean cut, because that's more likely to heal over quickly. And are you going to keep it in the pot or just keep it for a little while? Because, you know, they'll grow in pots, but they do a whole lot better in real dirt.
I'm going to keep it in the pot until I can move it. I'm moving to a new location. I've got to get beds prepared.
Okay. Well, the main thing is keep in mind that the peonies in pots are going to dry out more quickly than they would out in the dirt. You don't want to keep it too wet, Laura. If you keep it too wet, it can rot the roots, but because it's drought tolerant. But, you know, make sure it doesn't stay dry or too wet. But also put it in a place where it gets morning sunshine, but not hot middle of the day sun, because they really grow better further north. Try to avoid it like on a patio or against a wall where there's a lot of heat. Try to put it where it gets some morning sunshine, but protection from radiated heat and middle of the day sun. But I would just cut those roots off. That's just part of it.
Okay, thank you.
Okie dokie, appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And by the way, folks, if you're tuning in on a podcast in the South, we say peony. Up north, they say peony. Some places say piney. It doesn't matter as long as we both know what we're talking about. Let's go to Flowood now. Hey, Laurie, thank you for calling.
Hey, how are you?
Fine, thank you. What's up?
I had a few questions. My first question was, I've had ants in my compost heap, which is just a really large planter, since the summer, and I thought, well, maybe they'll just die over the winter, but they didn't. Is there anything I can do, or does it even matter if they're in there? I'm just worried that they would, like, eat the ants or something.
No, you said these are ants that are in it?
Yeah, fire ants. In the compost.
Yeah. One thing you can do, this sounds kind of really weird, but if it's an open pile, if you water it really good and then throw some clear plastic over it, clear plastic lets sunshine through and it'll heat up the water that's in your compost and steam the ants. You know, it's sort of like in a car with the windows all rolled up. But at the same time, they really don't hurt stuff that much. If you can just work real quick and keep them off your fingers, they're not that big a deal. They're really, really not.
Oh, but I guess I can't really put it in my garden because it'll
Sure, you can. Sure you can. You know, fire ants are going to, you know, they start nests by moving the eggs and things like that. You know, if you sift the compost, you know, before you put it out someplace, the random ants are going to run around until they get out. They're going to get lost and just wander off and die. You know, you only have to worry about them if you move a bunch of eggs and they start a new mound. But they're going to do that anyway. So you deal with the mounds, separate issue. But what you know what hardware cloth is?
No, but I can figure it out.
Yeah. Go to any hardware store. It looks like window screen, but the screens are like a half inch. You know, it's a really big square screen.
Yeah.
Get some of that and just drape it over a trash can and throw your compost on top of that, and run the shovel over it. It'll sift the good stuff down into it, and you throw the other stuff back, and that really boogers up ants. They can't figure out what to do with that. But that's a good way to sift out the good stuff and throw the big stuff back in, and you can do it quick enough where the ants don't bother you.
Okay. Well, my next question is, I was thinking about getting growing elderberries because, you know, everybody's so keen on those right now. What about Adams and elderberry? Do you think I could get some of those around here locally or?
Elderberry, there's several different kinds of elderberries. For one thing, there's woody small tree elderberries, which we don't really grow much in the South. This one you see all over England and New England and all. The kind we have, they come up, they're herbaceous perennial. They're really big, and then they die down in the winter, and they start back up. And typically they bloom in late May or June or so. But they're real easy to grow. You just have to find some of those. But I haven't seen anybody selling elderberry trees or elderberry shrubs, not in central Mississippi.
Okay, and my last question is, I was trying to get my 12-year-old son interested in gardening, and besides just forcing him to go out there and help me put seeds in, and so he said, well, I might want to grow corn. Is it feasible to be able to grow corn in your backyard?
But instead, corn needs to be grown in groups because that little tassel at the top, that's where the pollen comes from, and it falls down on the silks, which is, you know, what makes the corn in there. And if you don't grow, if you grow them straight up, the wind will blow the pollen away. So he needs to plant like four or five rows a couple of feet apart in like a square. So collectively, they keep all their pollen when the wind blows. But yeah, you can do that. It's actually kind of interesting. There's also this thing called the three sisters that your son might even get him interested a little bit in history. Shoot me an email. Is he listening or is he at school?
No, he's at school.
Okay. Shoot me an email. We'll figure some ways out to get him involved with that. I'm feeling like a goober, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Okay.
But no, hey, I spent my childhood hoeing 80-foot rows of okra, and it made me turn out weird. So we don't want to do that to him. But yeah, he grew corn and a couple of other things, and actually, in a way that makes him feel kind of cool. We just got to be careful on that one because he's 12.
4 to 5 rows, 1 foot apart. That does sound like kind of a large area.
Yeah. I mean, he can grow some smaller areas, but he needs to have at least 3 or 4 or 5 plants in an area that you can barely bigger than you can put your arms around, but pretty close to each other. In other words, a group of corn, not a corn plant.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Cool. Thank you.
Shoot me an email. Let's have some fun with this. Let's raise him right.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. All righty, folks. You got to be careful with kids. You know, they don't all think alike, and none of them think like grown-ups, and none of them think like we want them to think. There's all sorts of ways we can involve children and young people in gardening in a way that they don't know that they're being taught how to do stuff that'll apply later. Doesn't really matter. We're going to be talking about gardening for the rest of the hour. Going to do a little short piece of a happy can we get along type of tune and come back with more of your phone calls. Kevin and Java and me and all those folks at MPB appreciate you tuning in. So things we can help you with or help promote, give us a call or shoot us an email, gardening@mpbonline.org. We'll be right back after this.
You wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in the neighborhood with you. So let's make the most of this beautiful day. Since we're together, we might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor?
This is Malcolm White with the Mississippi Arts Commission. I'm one of the hosts of the Mississippi Arts Hour, the arts interview show on Think Radio. Every week, myself or one of my fellow hosts bring you in-depth interviews with different creative Mississippians. We talk with visual artists, musicians, writers, as well as people who help bring the arts to their communities. We hear about how each artist learned their craft and get some insight into their creative process. You can hear the Arts Hour every Sunday at 5 p.m. on Think Radio, or listen anytime by subscribing to the show through your favorite podcast app.
Okie dokie, folks. Welcome back. Horticulturist Fellow Rushing. Just got a great email from John B. Switzer. He said, what a glorious day it is in Mississippi. I'm enjoying your show and the beautiful views of the countryside on Highway 45 between Meridian and Tupelo. Thanks for making my day even brighter. You are welcome, Sir John. Appreciate that. Let's fly it over to Fort Worth, Texas, on what I call the desert side of Texas. Hey, Ray, how are you this morning? You're on the verge of West Texas.
I am on the icy side yesterday, but I'm doing good, Felder. How are you today?
Good. What's up?
Well, I was listening to your show a couple weeks ago, and you got me excited about trying to plant some tomatoes this year from seed. So I ordered some from Seed Savers, and I was just wondering if you had any tips to get them started and when how to put them in the ground.
Yeah, a couple of things. You live near Fort Worth?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you're going to need to wait until not just the danger of frost has passed, but when the dirt is warmed up. So we're looking at the first part of April before I put them in the ground. So let's wait a couple of weeks before we get them started. Here's a tip for anybody starting seeds indoors. They need warmth. They need light. But most important, they need humidity. So if you start them in little seed starter trays and cover it with some plastic, put some plastic spoons or something, cover it with clear plastic wrap to make like a little miniature greenhouse. This keeps the humidity high and it'll keep warmth in. And they'll sprout real fast that way. And as soon as they sprout, get rid of the plastic. And every day that's above 50 degrees, put them out in the real sunshine. It's not just the low light of indoors, but also the low humidity indoors that makes them real leggy and floppy and skinny. The ones they have at garden centers are real thick and sturdy because they're exposed to cool temperatures, real sunshine, and even the wind that blows them around that stimulates and thickens up their stems. So high humidity to get them started, indoors. As soon as they sprout, lose the plastic, and as soon as they really start growing at all, give them some real sunshine as long as it's above 50, 55 degrees. Just bring them in at night and make sure that the cats don't use it for their litter box.
All right, perfect.
That's just a start. Shoot me an email. Be glad to help. Of course, you got all sorts of folks over there from Texas A&M that help you. Lots of good folks there in your neck of the woods.
Okay, well, perfect. I appreciate it. I'm excited to try it. We've done them from seedlings before, but never actually seeds.
Yeah, main thing is we want them to come up fast. We don't want them to get long and leggy, and that means sunshine and a little bit of a breeze. Even a little West Texas sunshine and a little bit of breeze, they'll do great.
All right. Thank you very much.
You bet, Ray. Appreciate it, man. Okay, let's slide up to Hernando, Mississippi. Hello, this is I don't know how to pronounce the name. Sapin. Yeah, what's up?
I was calling about the gentleman that called about the aquarium, Jason.
Yeah?
I just had a couple of comments.
Good.
I'm not sure what kind of planting he's doing, but he can also plant inside the aquarium and actually make a planted aquarium. Also, if you add more fish, they'll naturally fertilize the plants because, you know, their waste is going to be what's putting on the plants. And
yeah,
if you wanted to go further, you can infuse the water with CO2, and it kind of gets expensive, but it blows up the growth in the aquarium and also outside of it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've read snippets of that, but not being an aquarium person, you know, I can't put the two and two together from personal experience. Can you get little CO2 generators like in Amazon or something?
Yes, you can. You just have to put a regulator on a CO2 tank, and then there's a little device that infuses it makes micro bubbles that infuses CO2. But you have to be careful because you have to put a probe in to control the pH, because if the pH will drop too much, all your fish will die. And you can get water soluble nutrients. I've used like you said, potassium and also nitrogen, and also you have to balance, I think it's called your DHK or something like that, where your pH swings are not too high or low, so it kind of gradually decreases your pH. Otherwise, it just makes the system completely unstable. But saying that, a small aquarium like a 20-gallon one, you're going to spend about $500 to $1,000 to make everything stable like that.
You can get new fish every year for that.
And yes, sir. And also, lighting is also a big issue. So you have to get the right lighting, the right timing. It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of micromanaging, trying to figure out exactly how the system is going to be stable.
Which makes an interesting hobby.
It's just basically trying to get, you know, like you mentioned, the algae growth. You have to just balance everything correctly. There's schedules that you can look online to put how many nutrients, and you have to take the water out. You have to stabilize the tank, and then people also put plants inside and outside. The outside plants, people have grown sweet potatoes. If you have a saltwater tank, you can do mangroves. It's just a lot of fun trying to grow plants in and out of the tank.
Well, I tell you what, because this is something that a lot more people should be interested in, and I don't have personal experience other than my mother's. I didn't learn anything from my mother's big thing. If you would you send me a couple of your favorite websites that might have details about this that I could learn myself and also pass on to anybody else?
Yes, sir. I can sure do that.
Do that. It's garden@mpbonline.org. This is, you know, that way I can learn some stuff. But more important, I have resources to send other people.
It's a lot of fun, and there's actual websites that describe. It's called aquascaping, and people make the things look like outside world, and it can get really, really complicated, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, you know, gardening can get complicated, or you can keep it real, real simple. A goldfish in a bowl is about as simple as you can get. You can get more and more complicated. But send me a couple of resources so I can learn a little bit, but more important, I can have something to help other folks with. I would appreciate that.
Okay. Sure, thank you.
All righty, man. I appreciate your call. Very interesting. Thank you. All righty. Let's go to Tim in Perkiston, down south. What's up, Tim?
Thank you for taking my call, Felder.
Yeah. So
I've got some oak trees in my yard, and for years I've been driving on the north side of them. The driveway's been, you know, 10, 15 feet off of them. And in the last 4 or 5 years, it's taken on a small business pulling trailer a lot. So I'm going up the south side of them and down the north side. Did I say that right? Been on the north side, started on the south side now. The south side... It killed the grass, and it's on a bit of a slope, so it's washing the dirt away, and all these roots are becoming exposed. They're not exposed on the north side where I've been driving for years. So what I was wanting to do is if I put dirt on, it's just going to wash away. So I put some crushed limestone on there, but it's going to damage the roots, but I don't know what damage it's going to do.
Okay, well, first of all, the putting stuff on top of the ground, not going to damage root. The crushed limestone or shale or something like that will lock into place and do a better job. Gravel will just wash away. So you need to use something that's chipped like that, you know, a crush or something that's angular that'll sort of pack down. But it won't hurt the roots at all. It really won't. You can also put across the slope, you know what Mondo grass is? M-O-N-D-O grass?
No.
Okay, some people call it little monkey grass. It's everywhere. All your neighbor, you may have some yourself, just didn't know what it's called. But Mondo grass or little monkey grass, you can plug in little pieces of it going across the wash here and there, and it'll sit there the first year. But next year, they'll make like a little something that slows the water down, and it'll catch leaves, and you can build it up that way. You can also put you some 2x4, 2x6 boards lengthways across it and sort of terrace it a little bit. So instead of sloping down, it sort of stair steps down every 3 or 4 or 5 feet. And that'll slow the water down. It'll hold your leaves, your mulch, and also your crushed limestone in place. So think about, you know, every 3 or 4 feet, just making like a little shelf, like a real big stair steps down that hillside. That really helps about as much as whatever you put in it.
All right, it sounds good. I appreciate it.
It's a lot easier to say, Tim, than it is to do. Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Call back in. You bet. Okay, let's slide up to Scuba. Peggy, we went from Perk Community College to Scuba Community College. What's going on? Peggy?
Scobie? Yes, hi.
Howdy, what's up?
You're I want to take my garden back from the grass. What's the most effective way to do that, and when should I do it?
Well, first of all, if it's Bermuda grass or perennial type of grass, the more you till it, the more you break it up, the more you're going to have. There's just no way around that. So, you know, other than letting it all green up and spraying it with something like, you know, that's safe for the garden, like Roundup, there's really not much you can do except keep it where you can till it and mulch it. You can put flattened out cardboard in between plants, like between your tomato plants and stuff, and it'll actually smother the grass and break down and feed your soil. So you might want to think about putting a real thick mulch down. And like I say, flattened out cardboard covered with anything else works about as well as anything. And it'll smother the grass too.
But there's not much
safe that you can spray out there while you have vegetables growing, is what I'm saying.
Okay. All right. Thank
That's
you.
Okay, it's a start. I wish there was an easier way, but if there was an easy way, I'd do it myself. But I just pull and I mulch, and that helps about as much as anything. Good luck
on
it.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye.
I got an email from Danny Pluckett, wants to know, Danny Ann Pluckett, wants to know, when's the best time to cut monkey grass? And I would say today, this weekend. Monkey grass, whether it's Mondo or Liriope or Liriope, however, Liriope, whatever you want to call it, monkey grass, it puts up all of its new growth in the middle of the late winter, early spring. And if you cut that, it's going to look ragged for the whole year. So you want to cut it back before the new growth comes up, or if it's starting to come up, just try not to cut the tips off the new growth. It'll look ragged. They put up all of this new growth just in the spring, and we don't want to make it look bad all year long. So if you just got to prune it, I go and get right on it and, you know, get down on your knees and see if you can find any new growth yet. And if you don't see any of that, have at it. If you do see some of that, just be careful. Try not to cut it too low. Got a lot of really interesting emails while I've been on the line. Don't know if I have time to answer them while I'm on the air. I will answer them by email. But one is from up in Starkville. Fellow wants to know if he can grow, Andrew Stamps wants to know if he can grow citrus. He said Lowe's is selling citrus trees. No. We have hard enough time growing citrus fruit even on the coast where they've been doing it for a century and a half. But in central Mississippi, the only hardy outdoor one is that thing they call wild lemon or hardy orange with the big thorns and little small furry fruits. You can grow several in big pots, you know, just big enough where you can't put your arms around it. They got to be dragged in and out every time the weather changes. They don't like to be indoors all winter, but they don't like freezes. So if you want to try to grow a kumquat or one of those kind of smaller, some of the lemon trees in big containers, be prepared to drag them into the garage when it freezes and put them back out when it's above 45 or 50 because they need that. Plus, they bloom in the wintertime. They need pollinating. So anyway, yeah, Lowe's sells things that won't grow in Mississippi. Nothing new there. So anyway, if you have some questions you want to shoot me an email about, it's garden@mpbonline.org. We'd like to mention that Colquitt Odom want to know when he should apply fertilizer to his St. Augustine. He said, do you recommend weed and feed or regular fertilizer? And this is the most important tip I can give you this time of year other than get your garden ready for spring is do not use weed killer fertilizer combinations. They are not good for southern grasses. I know they sell a lot. I know they're popular. I know they're big money makers, but it's like mixing sugar and toothpaste. I like sugar. I like toothpaste. And if they can sell a toothpaste that has sugar in it, it sell like hotcakes. But no, fertilize after the grass has been mowed a time or two in the spring. We're looking at April as the earliest recommended time by Mississippi State and Auburn to fertilize your lawn, early April. If you want to use weed killers right now, you need to use a liquid spray while the weeds are still fairly small. If you wait till next month, even weed killers won't kill them. So if you want to spray for weeds now, now's the time to do it, not a month from now. If you want to fertilize, let's wait till April. Make yourself do what's right for the lawn, not what's good for the pocketbook of somebody selling you a bunch of sugary toothpaste. Now, I know I sound kind of bold about that. I study turf management at Mississippi State. I'm real sure about this. Wait until April to fertilize your grass. If you got to spray weeds, if you just got to, let's get it done this month because next month weeds are too big to kill, likely hurt your grass. Anyway, all sorts of stuff going on. We've been live here at MPB. Got a lot of stuff I'd like to chat with you about, but me and Java Chapman and Kevin Farrell and all the other folks at MPB, we thank you for joining us. We thank the diggers out there, the determined independent gardeners who like to share plants and keep the flame going. We appreciate all of you listening to my podcast. Shoot me an email, garden@mpbonline.org, if you have things. But remember, sharpen your rough edges. Be the best version of your weird self you can be. Meanwhile, if you get out and about, take a kid to a garden center. Get them a little sack of something, an oregano or rosemary, something that smells good that they can turn into chili and spaghetti. Show young people how to do what we do best, and that's get dirty. See y'all at Hutto's next week at the Fruit Seminar.